physical and taking me out. I leaned out, shouldered the weapon in one quick, fluid movement, something almost beneath conscious thought, and this time I wasn't planning on missing. I fired. Because I was aiming for the front of the closest vehicle, I had an easier, more vulnerable target than my opponent. I watched the lead cable car blow apart in a grey cloud of fused innards. The driver must have died instantly, I assumed, but the gunner had fallen out of the car during the first instant of the explosion. I watched the black-clad figure plummet towards the mulch, weapon dropping alongside, and then heard nothing as the person hit the ground amidst a confusion of stalls and lashed-together dwelling places. Something felt wrong. I could feel it coming, unraveling into mind. Another Houseman episode. I fought it, tried desperately to anchor myself to the present, but it was already as if a second faint layer of reality was trying to settle over me. "Go to hell," I said. The other car loitered, continuing its descent for a moment, then turning around with a quick and elegant exchange of cable arms. I watched it rise to the canopy, and then, for the first time since I had become aware of the attack, realized that the siren was still shrieking in the cabin, except that now it had gained a new level of urgency. I placed the weapon down, then navigated the bucking car to the control chair. I could feel the Houseman episode clawing its way to the front of my head, like a seizure on the point of happening. The ground was coming up too fast. We were almost dropping, I realized, probably just skimming down a single strand of cable. People, rickshaws, and animals were fleeing the area below, although with no real agreement on where it was I was likely to touch down. I got into the chair and worked the controls, largely randomly, hoping that there was something I could do which would level off the rate of descent. And then the ground was so close I could read the expressions on the mulch people below, and none of them looked overjoyed at my arrival. And then I hit the mulch. The conclave room was deep inside the Palestine, sealed from the rest of the ship by massive bulkhead doors which had been decorated in ornate metal scrollwork, festooning like alloy vines. Inside was a massive rectangular table surrounded by 20 high-backed seats, less than a dozen of which were occupied. The matter of the messages from home was one of utmost security, and it was considered normal that the other vessels had sent only two or three delegates apiece. They sat around the table now, their stiffly suited figures reflected in the table's polished mahogany surface, so dark and mirror-like that it resembled a slab of perfectly still moonlit water. Rising from the center of the table was a projection apparatus, which was cycling through the technical schematics contained in the first message, skeletal graphics of dazzling complexity flashing into existence. Sky sat next to Balcazar, listening to the faint labors of the old man's medical tabard. "And this modification would appear to give us more elaborate control of the confinement bottle topology than we yet have," said the Palestine senior propulsion theorist, freezing one of the schematics. "Coupled with the other things we've seen, it should give us a steeper deceleration profile, not to mention the ability to throttle back the flow without experiencing magnetic blowback. That would let us turn off an antimatter engine, while there's still fuel in the reservoir, and restart it later, something we can't do with the current design." "Could we make those mods even if we trusted them?" asked Omdurman, the Baghdad's commanding officer. He wore a glossily black tunic, flashed with grey and white sigils of rank. Coupled with the paleness of his skin and the deep black of his hair and beard, he was a study in monochrome. "In principle, yes." Beneath a sheen of perspiration, the propulsion tech's face was